Welcome to the latest episode of Taking to the Street. I'm here with my partner and frenemy, Jim Labenthal. Used to be all in Jim, but Jim's turned a little negative on the markets recently. And we're also here, really honored and so thrilled with Damian Woody, who I followed his career. I grew up in Manhattan, and I had in my building some old Jets, such as Billy Mathis, who was an old fullback, and Joe Willie would come by every so often. John Riggins would come by, and I was a kid there growing up with the Jets and was just a Jets fan for life. And of course, Damian was on the Jets for a while, but also is a Super Bowl winner, having been on New England and just legendary. But I think he's just as legendary, and we were talking about this before we came on, for his free-flowing, unfiltered commentary on football, which says a lot of things that we wish we could say on air, but he says them because he's the authority. He can get away with it. And says it with a smile on his face, which is critical. Well, I got lectured today on the halftime report by Jim for being cranky or coming off angry. And Jim, I'm just never as comfortable with losing money as you are. It's a new experience for me.
I'm not losing money, man. This cyclical trade is killing it right now. You do get crabby, though. You do get crabby. You're like talking about how you're short the market. The market's going down and you're crabby.
I'm still losing money, truth be told. But let's talk about what's going on. Last week, we talked about, and actually for the last few weeks, we gave a window into what the Fed was going to do. And if I could pick football games as well, I wouldn't have come in 40 out of 50 in my pool. But we'll leave that for another time, and I'm going to hire Damian to tutor me on handicapping. But we gave a window into the Fed, and we had thought the Fed was going to be more aggressive. And that came out in the minutes last week. I've been short the TLT. It's been a great trade. I actually covered most of it today because I think we've gone far enough. And even though my net exposure was down to 50%, I was short some indices. It's the long positions that were hurting, and unjustifiably so. But Jim, you had a good call, even though you're only in 10% cash, so 90% net long. So I love that creative counting that doesn't allow you to lose money with that kind of market exposure, based upon what I'm seeing on my screen, knowing your largest position is getting hit today. But that aside, the market seems to be setting up for a little bounce. Tomorrow, we'll have Jay Powell, that's Tuesday, talking and giving some testimony in front of Congress as they look to confirm his reappointment for a second term. And then we'll get inflation numbers, CPI on Wednesday. That could be a whole another ball game, but I don't think anybody expects those numbers to come down appreciably at this point. So maybe it's all in at this point, at least temporarily.
Well, I'm not all in. You know that. I took some money off the table. I'm watching the bounce intraday today. I mean, we've clawed back more than half of the decline that happened right at the open or shortly after the open. So the market's clawing back, and herein lies the question. Is this, as Marco Kolanovic of JP Morgan today called it, the perfect buy the dip? Or is this, as I think it is, a little bit different this time? And that the dip is going to be a bit more than the 5% that we've seen over the last 15 months? And for me, the answer is simple, all right? Sometimes the answer is simple. And when the Fed starts withdrawing accommodation, basically when it lowers and is soon to remove all the cash that it's been injecting into the financial markets, that removes the smoothing element in the markets. Sure, you could get a bounce today. You know, of course, I'm going to pepper this all with football references and Jets references, and Damian's with us, which is a great privilege. But a week and a half ago, the Jets played the Buccaneers, and they were beating Tom Brady's Buccaneers for like 57 minutes. And at that time, you could say, well, okay, maybe everybody got it wrong. Maybe that wasn't the easiest call in the world. And then the young team showed itself, a team with a lot of promise. A young team made one mistake and the Bucks won out. And the point being is that sometimes the obvious call is the right call, even if along the way some bumps come in. So look, I don't think we're in for a bear market. I said that on the show today. You've got jobs are plentiful out there. But this idea that the S&P 500, after 19 months of not touching the 200-day moving average, is somehow destined to never touch it again is, in my opinion, false. The obvious reading here is we go down to the 200-day moving average, probably a percent or two below that. The 200-day moving average today is 4,400. That's a good 5-6% below where we are now. I think we're in the midst of that. We could bounce around with Jay Powell tomorrow. Who knows? Maybe the CPI numbers are benign. But ultimately, I think this quarter, you're going to get back down to that 200-day moving average.
You done, Jim, or should I ask them to bring me a cup of coffee?
Well, I only took about half the time that you take, Steve. I mean, that intro was like, after the intro, we're ready for the outro with you.
Okay.
Can we bring in Damien? He's more interesting than
yes,
you.
Yes, definitely. So, Damien, you've been on Halftime Report a few times, and I think that when you've come on that I've said, wow, I mean, maybe I got to take a look at that stock, and Jim owns a couple. And so let's start with what you're thinking about right now in terms of how you're looking at the market. I know most of your money's managed professionally, but about a couple of years ago, I guess it is, you'd said, I'm going to get involved personally, which is never a bad thing to know what's happening with the professional side, although I'm sure you're on it. So let's start with this, perhaps. What brought you into the market? Why did you want to do it? Because you've got so many things going on in your life. And then tell me what you're thinking about things now, how they've changed over the last 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, what really brought me in is I've always been the type of guy that you get better at things by getting your hands dirty with it. There's nothing like firsthand experience. And so for me, yes, I've learned from a lot of different people. I learned from professionals who manage my accounts and all the different people that I've come across. But at the same time, I figured I want to take a little piece of my money and I'm going to learn the business from the ground up. I'm going to learn the market from the ground up. That's the only way I've done it, whether it's I'm invested in real estate. I do a lot of real estate. I did it from the ground up, learned the game from the ground up. That's how I really learned the business. So I figured when it came to the market, why not get your hands dirty and from the ground up and just learn the terminology, the tricks to the trade, and really just study. It's like football. Football is, you have these manuals, terminology, different plays in a playbook. And so I just try to take the things that I learned from football, which a lot of it kind of really relates to life, and just applied it to the market itself.
I love that. I mean, that's how every good investor should get started, with a little bit of fearlessness. Actually, it sounds like a lot of fearlessness, and just dive in. And obviously, don't bet everything on the first stock that you pick, but that's how you learn. I think sometimes there's this aura out there that there's a magic language. There's some magic degree that you're supposed to have. You get a CFA and, oh, all of a sudden you know how to pick stocks. No, you get a CFA and you make just as many bad picks as you did before. But the way you get better is experience. And that's why a guy like you on the field, by the time you've had a few years, you're teaching the younger guys what to do. I love this. It's exactly right. Get your hands dirty. Awesome.
Damien, let me ask you a question. So I find that a lot of new investors, when they come into the market over the last few years, one of the things they've done is immediately gravitate towards Bitcoin. But when you were on the show in May, you said, basically, I'll have none of that. I can't touch it. I'm just not a believer. So at that point, I believe the price, because I looked at it, was about 57,000. And now we're seeing it bumping along 40,000. Is it the right price to go in, or are you still a non-believer?
I'm still very skeptical. I'm not the type of guy that when everybody's jumping off the bridge, I'm not the type of guy, well, I'm going to jump off too. I'm the type of guy that if it doesn't make sense to me, if I can't wrap my hands around it, I'm not doing it. So for me, I like real estate. I like Apple, Microsoft, Dick's Sporting Goods, things that I use. A lot of my investments that I do personally are things that I use on a day-to-day basis. I see it every day, it's tried and true, and I believe in it. And so the money that I put in the stock market on a personal basis, I usually invest in things that tangibly I use on a day-to-day basis.
You've never seen Steve smile as broadly as when you said Dick's Sporting Goods. He's been talking about it for months.
Yes, and I've gotten in trouble mentioning it because I do think size matters with Dick's Sporting Goods, and I've said that, and people have criticized that terminology, but it does. And Dick's is one of the cheapest stocks I own in my portfolio, actually. That and Moderna, which had great news today. Dick's Sporting Goods is going to earn $14 this year, and it's selling. It's $108. And it actually traded off $4 today. And I bought a little for a trade, but I have a big enough position. But I love it. And like you, I own Apple and Microsoft, because they're brands, they're great names, and we know them, and they have recurring revenue streams. So, Jimmy, I don't think you own Microsoft, but you do own Apple.
No, I've sold Microsoft recently. Nothing negative against the company, and like Damien, I own Apple, which I've trimmed recently, and my thought process here is really just about the multiples on these stocks. Apple, I'm going to retain a core position in. But I don't think the multiple is going to expand as interest rates go higher. So you get the multiple constant. It means the share price will grow at the rate of earnings per share, whatever that is, 8 to 10%.
8 to 10% may be a good return in the market going forward, by the way.
It might be. But Microsoft, I've got a problem with. Not the company. I mean, the company's fabulous, but the forward multiple is about 7 times higher than Apple. It's about 37 versus 30. And I'm just having a tough time justifying those extra 7 turns. Now, look, betting against Microsoft is the wrong thing to do, and it's 6% of the S&P 500, but maybe I'm being too cute. I'm just staying out of it for now.
Well, nobody's ever going to accuse you of being cute, but away from that, let me help you with the distinction between the companies. Apple makes hard products. Microsoft is a software company, a cloud company. So their cost, even though Apple farms out all their manufacturing, that won't be the case going forward, by the way. But the recurring revenue stream on Microsoft with their subscription model that you can't say no to is phenomenal. Their margins are incredible and they are the leader. They drive the world. So that's the difference in multiples.
Yeah, but I could do the same thing with Google. And again, soft products, as soft as they come. And still it has about, in that case, 9 times extra turns. So it's nothing against Microsoft. It's just, I have a hard time with the price. That's all.
Got it. Damon, you also had owned, and I'm curious if you still do, General Motors and Ford, which have been great stocks, particularly Ford.
I do. I still own it. I actually bought more of it. Again, it just, for me, it goes just to my philosophy. What I stated earlier of, I drive a GMC. I have a Ford. I believe in the vision of both companies. I think both stocks are good. And I increase my position on both of those. So yeah, I love both companies.
What about Tesla? You were a holder of Tesla at one point, then I believe you shaved it. Are you out of it completely now, or are you still involved?
I'm not out of it completely, but I did shave it down significantly. I just worry about the growth with Tesla. It's been such an explosive stock. I just shaved my position down as far as Tesla is concerned.
I think that makes sense. Jimmy and I talk about these stocks often. He's a big bull on GM. I'm a big bull on Volkswagen and Porsche because I believe that Volkswagen is going to spin out Porsche. And standing alone, when I compare it to Ferrari, which has about a $70 billion or $65 billion market cap, that you can create another $50 to $100 billion in the valuation of Volkswagen / Porsche. So that's why I'm a big fan of it. Jimmy loves GM, of course, and has for a while, is very early on it.
I do. It's interesting. I was talking about multiples a second ago. So GM is a multiple around 8.5 times this year's earnings. Ford's around 11 times. And those numbers indicate just a real lack of respect for the earnings power of these companies. Here's what's funny. You go back 2 years ago, 3 years ago, those multiples were 6. I mean, it was a joke. Nobody wanted to own these companies. What's interesting here, and the reason why people sell these companies, is the belief that whenever times are good, something's going to happen. You're going to get a recession. People are going to lose jobs. The workers are going to strike, whatever it may be. On those two things, though, I think we're pretty far away from it. Now, GM had to deal with a strike about 3 years ago, and they cleared that up, and that should cover them for the coming years. As far as consumers losing jobs, I just don't see that. I mean, every news article we see is that jobs are plentiful and employers can't get enough hires. So you've also had this pent-up demand from the lack of semiconductors. I don't know. All three of us must have driven by plenty of dealer lots. And I need a new car. I need 2 new cars for my family. There's none available.
You hit it right on the head, Jim. I've gone to like 4 different dealerships. The lots are basically empty. And oh, by the way, I'm investing in semiconductors as well because this whole supply chain is still a big issue.
Which ones do you like, Damien?
NVIDIA.
Yep.
AMD.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are the two that I'm in right now.
Those are 2 good ones. I mean, they've corrected like everybody else, but they definitely are at the cutting edge of a lot of innovation and the hot sectors of the market, such as data centers and gaming. So it should keep going. I'm looking at NVIDIA now. I don't know if I'll pull the trigger on it yet. I own a couple that have been much cheaper, still growing as fast as the others, but just don't get the love that they do, like Skyworks.
I got a question for you guys.
Sure.
The thing I've been looking into now is cybersecurity, just looking at different companies that's their focus. What do you guys think about that? Just moving forward, I just still think that's going to be a big issue And that's an area of increased interest of mine.
I think that's a great call. The stocks got way ahead of themselves, and they're some of the Cathie Wood stocks, so they just have these inflated multiples. The issue is, as rates move up, because a lot of them aren't making money or making such little money, that you have to forecast their earnings going out 5 and 10 years. And as rates go up, of course, that makes those earnings worth less. So I would like to buy some. I'm doing some work in the sector now as you speak, and I'll share with you what I come up with. I'm not looking to pick the bottom because trying to pick bottoms and tops is a very difficult game, and there are very few people that can do it. And I work with two of them, Steve Cohen and Dave Tepper, but they would tell you that's not what they try to do. But it's a great space. It's not going away because as smart as those companies get, it seems like the motivation of the hackers also gets greater. So they have this focus, the hackers, where all I have to do is this, and I could break into that system, I could hold them for ransom, or for whatever, get their jollies disrupting. But to me, and you've heard the Fed say it, you've heard the highest levels of government, of corporations say it, that's the number one threat to the economy, is security. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the theme there. I think much like semiconductors, there's a bunch of different ways to play it. You can take one of these high flyers like a CrowdStrike, which I think was a Cathie Wood stock. It's been laid low by at least a third in recent months. And maybe this is the right time to pick it up. That's definitely, I think, the bellwether in the space. So you're getting it for cheap. Another way to play it, if you're a little bit more price sensitive, and Damien, you're probably hearing from me that that's kind of how I run, Cisco Systems. It's not a pure play, but a good portion of their business and a growing part of their business is security. It's not as sexy as CrowdStrike. It just isn't. It's something that will be more of a steady eddy over the years. It'll outperform the S&P 500, but it'll have times where you're kind of looking at it and saying, why is this in my portfolio again? If you stick with it over time, that's a good one.
CrowdStrike, I don't think there's anything wrong with nibbling on it here. I don't think it's a good time to put a full position on because we still don't know what'll happen with rates. But it's a big space. There are also ETFs, the ticker escapes me now, that earn that space as well. But it's only going to get bigger, and more corporate budgets are going towards it. So I think that's a great call. Damien, let me ask you, let me go off for a second in football. I watch the games like we all do, and you got to help me with this. You were a lineman. Do you really not feel the cold in your arms? I mean, like, why not put on sleeves? I played rugby. We had long sleeves and shorts. And I got to tell you, when I got hit, it stung on my legs. What is it with these guys?
What was your position on the team? Were you the ball?
I was the scrum half.
You were the ball.
Yeah. It was a man's game. You wouldn't see your teddy bear there. And why are you doing this from your daughter's room? I don't understand that.
So people who are listening aren't going to know what he's talking about. I've got a stuffed sloth over my shoulder here.
Yes.
Anyway, Damien's answer is more important.
Yeah. So why is that?
Yeah. So I tell people all the time, because people ask me that question a lot, football is, from a mindset standpoint, it's like psychological warfare. And so what you tend to do is you don't want to be the one that looks weak. You don't want to be the one that thinks that you're focused on the elements rather than what's really important. That's the football game. So a lot of times what you see is you'll see, I'll give you a prime example. When I played in New England, we would always play down in Miami in September when it's just ridiculously hot. And then they would schedule the Miami Dolphins to come up to Foxborough in December when it's freezing cold. So the guys from Miami would come up and they would run outside with no shirt on to warm up and all those type of things, because it's all about psychological warfare. They wanted to put up the front that this doesn't bother us. We're focused on the game, so on and so forth. This happens all around the league all the time. Now, there are things that guys put on their arms, their skin, to keep them warm. There's products that basically it's like icy hot times 1,000, where your skin basically feels like it's about to melt off your body, but it keeps you warm in extreme temperature. Those are kind of the tricks of the trade that guys are doing. It's like an optical illusion, but it's really all about psychological warfare.
That's crazy. I would show them how tough I was by going out there and like hitting J.J. Watt in the chin, taking the penalty, and then get to be warm, put my sleeves on.
You're not hitting J.J. Watt in the chin.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my strategy. But when you were playing, did you give any thought to investing after you were done? Did you start when you were playing, have an interest in the markets or real estate? Or is this after you stopped?
No, I was doing this during my playing career, because when I came into the league, I already had an exit strategy. There were things I wanted to accomplish, but at the same time, the average career coming in was 3 years. Actually, it was like 2.5, but I just rounded up to 3. So I knew, even though I was a high draft, I was a number one pick of the Patriots, I knew that at any given point, you could sustain a serious injury and your career could be over. So you have to start laying the groundwork for the future, because all of these athletes, even if they have a long career, you're still a young man. You have your whole life ahead of you. So you need to lay the groundwork while you're playing. And that's exactly what I did. Real estate, investing. I started prepping what I wanted to do as far as post-career. And that was media. I started doing media during my career. So when I transitioned out of the game, I was already ahead of the game with my investments, my portfolio, my real estate portfolio, and then my media career.
Damian, was anybody in particular helpful to you as you made the transition from football to business? It's beyond commendable. That's a very hard transition to make. Who were your mentors doing that?
So I had 3 mentors throughout my whole career that really helped guide me as far as navigating the business world, because I do own franchises as well. And so these are 3 guys that they were Boston College alums that, before I even signed my rookie deal, they were already on my team, just guided me through everything, through the whole process, looking over contracts, managing money, what to look for with portfolio managers, insurance, just a bevy of things that these guys just really helped me out with. And I still meet with these guys probably like once a month now and just talk to them more, probably like once a week over the telephone. But all 3 of these guys, man, have been just tremendous assets to me as far as, again, investments, not only in the markets, but just real estate. That's the area that I've been really proud of, is real estate and building that portfolio.
What kind of real estate do you own?
Apartment buildings. So I own, let's see, 45 apartment buildings up and down the East Coast. And I started that at the beginning of my career. And again, those guys guided me through that whole process, making sure that the deals were correct and the language and the verbiage and assembling the team of people, assembling the professionals that will help me do the deals and all those type of things. It's been a long road, man, but I couldn't ask to be in a better position, to be honest with you.
That's phenomenal. And are you still, the real estate market is kind of tight. One of my investors, we're looking right now at warehousing logistics. And I was talking to another person yesterday who works for a family, and he oversees their warehouses, and they own tens of millions of square feet of warehousing. And in talking to some people in London, because I don't care if we invest here or invest in Europe, prices are just so high, and there's still so much money chasing them that I believe in the growth, and I believe in the businesses, and I'm interested in warehousing logistics, because online is still, I believe, in its infancy, even though it's grown tremendously. But just can't get there with cap rates at 3.25% here, and because of different taxes and laws in Europe at 4%. And multifamily that you're in, that's been probably the best area over the last 10, 20 years, because there's been no let up, and you're continuing to see that. So are you a buyer now, a seller, or you're just holding on and being opportunistic when you can?
I'm holding on because I want to see what these interest rates are going to be doing. I'm not buying anything right now. I'm just kind of staying put. I'm seeing what the Fed is going to be doing, because, man, there's a lot of cash out there. There's a lot of cash, and people are throwing around stupid money right now. And so I don't want to compete with that. I'm not going to compete with stupid people throwing around stupid money.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I was looking at, this is not a real estate deal, but it was another deal I was looking at. And they did an A round, valuing the company at $150 million. And they were looking to do what they called a B-minus round or an A-plus round before their scheduled B round, only 4 months later. without any appreciable change in the business at $800 million valuation. And I said, what makes you believe? We didn't do the deal, of course. I mean, I wasn't going to do it for more than the 150. I said, what makes you think that it's worth 4 times to 6 times of what you paid for it? And they said, because people are asking us to invest. There's so much money out there. So I said, okay, well, that answers it. And that's an honest answer, but it's not the answer I want.
That's right. There's a lot of money out there, a lot of money. But again, I can't speak for everyone else. But for me, I'm just going to sit tight right now.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All this talk about free money, and it does come back to the Fed. And Damian, you mentioned that. There's a thought that's been rattling around my head today. And Steve and I were on the show today. We were all discussing what the Fed's doing, interest rates, all that sort of stuff. We've got a couple of inflation reports coming up this week. And nobody's dancing with the idea of what if. What if they're like benign? I mean, we've seen interest rates, the 10-year go from whatever, 150 to 180 in the space of a week. And all the prognostications are now Jay Powell's hawkish, the Fed's hawkish. What if Jay Powell threw in the towel just at the wrong time? I mean, literally just before it gets better. It was last month he appeared before Congress and retired transitory. I think we all, no, I shouldn't say this, but I believe at some point inflation will start to give. It'll start to weaken. What if it's this week, right after he does his confirmation hearing? What do you think, Steve? Is that even possible?
Oh, it's possible. Everything's possible, but I think it's unlikely. Even if it does happen, the Fed doesn't only look at one report. They look in average reports. But my biggest concern is that this is not a typical cycle where the Fed could cool demand by raising rates just one time, 25 bips or 50 bips or even 75 bips. There's no level right now that's reasonable that will drive people back to work. They just won't do it. So you've lost a large part of the workforce, which will come back over time as they deplete savings and as their Bitcoin, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, continues to crater, maybe as markets correct more, but you're short of workers. I was in a restaurant last night, just a local place. I said, how are things going? I said, we can't find anybody to work here. You go to department stores. We were in Nordstrom's. We had to pick something up. The cupboard's bare. No inventories.
I'm going to give you my own anecdotes. I work in a company that has 350 people. Obviously, some of them, a lot of them are pretty young. I mean, really young, and they're quitting. There's this concept that is totally foreign of me of quitting without another place to go. Like that never growing up would have occurred to me of like, I'm going to quit a job and just kind of hang out.
It's happening. It's happening.
It is, Damian. And I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this because I think part of it is what Steve just alluded to in terms of cryptocurrencies. I think some of these younger people, and that's where the cryptocurrency gains have been, I think they've made a lot of money. I've met some of them. They got a lot more hair than me, and I don't know, maybe they have more money than me from their crypto. But it's unquestionable there's been crypto riches. Now, do these get given back? Bitcoin today at 40,000 from 68, maybe going lower. And do these, I'm going to call them kids, I'm sure they wouldn't like to hear that, but do these kids then go back to work?
I think society's made it okay. They seem to have blessed the fact that younger people are, too much is put on them. I grew up with no money at all. Parents were poor, divorced and poor, and had to work. And that was always how it was. And you've got that work ethic. Damien clearly has that work ethic because you don't get into the NFL unless you have an incredible work ethic, because how many people want to do it and how many people are trying to do it and how many people make it. So nothing's been given to any of us. And that philosophy never existed that it's okay to take time off. It's okay to relax. It's okay that you don't want to be told what to do at work, but that's why it's work. So I'd be curious in your thoughts on that, Damian, and how you see, if you see that playing out in professional athletics at all with the coaches, that you got to be a player's coach now. You got to take it easy. But we're seeing all the players' coaches got fired over the weekend pretty much.
I'm going to tell you, here's the difference. When I first came to the league, coaches used to frown upon guys kind of doing other things outside the football because they considered it a distraction. They would say, either you're 100% committed to your craft or you're not. You fast forward to now, and I'm not saying this in a bad way. I actually think it's pretty cool. These guys have found a way to kind of balance not only football, but interest outside of the game. And they're doing it more than ever before. These guys are getting heavily invested in crypto, real estate. These guys are doing a lot of different things that when I first came to the league, I would have never thought about doing. And so I'm in a unique perspective where I'm kind of, I have kids who are, my oldest two are 22, 21. And the great thing about them is they open my eyes and they're thinking and what their peers are thinking. They don't think about, what if I don't have a fallback plan? Their whole mindset is, we're going to force it. We're going to force the issue. We're going to make it work itself out. They don't think like, I need to have another job lined up. They're just saying, screw it. Why am I going to put myself in a position at a job I hate and that's going to wear on me mentally when I can just go out there and I'm just going to try it and we're going to see what happens? That's really their mindset. I said, you know what? I respect you for that, because when I was growing up, that was never the case. My parents, my grandparents, they never taught me to do anything like that. They would like slap me if I even thought about quitting the job before I had something lined up. But these younger folks, they're just like, I'm not going to wear out my mental health being in a toxic environment where I'm not happy. That's just what they're not going to do.
And I agree with that. And that's what I was referring to. I agree completely with that and had that discussion with one of my daughters and even with the other one who is happy but works in private equity real estate. She was working 18 hours a day, literally 7 days a week. But she likes it, and now she's able to dial back a little bit. But I was talking more about the ones that are leading more the gypsy lifestyle, and the ones I see run into too often, that they just don't want to work that hard. It's not that they're unhappy with what they're doing. Your kids are driven. You're talking about others that are driven.
Well, you know what, Steve? Here's a problem, and it's really a problem. The problem is, a lot of times, some of these kids, I tell like my kids a lot of times, social media is not the real world. And so these kids get caught up on Instagram, looking at things on Instagram and thinking, oh, well, if this person's doing it, I know I can do it. But that's not the real world, because a lot of these people on Instagram, they're putting up an image that's not true. And a lot of people are getting caught up in those type of things. And I tell my kids, there's no microwave living around here. If you really want it, you got to take your time and cook that meal. And I tell them all the time, I enjoy a meal that I cook. That's just me. The meal tastes better. And I tell my kids all the time, if you want to enjoy it, you got to take your time and prepare that meal. And so that's what these kids are really missing. They want microwave success instead of preparing that meal and sitting down and enjoying it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Damien.
I'm going to steal that expression, microwave success.
Yeah, but that was really well put, because look, these kids who I see quitting, they have a point, all right, about work-life balance. And I will grant them that point. We should all have work-life balance. But, you know, in your 20s, these are the critical years of you putting in the hard work in the trenches, man.
Oh, this is when you should go get it.
This is where you're learning the things that when you're our age, you're like, this is instinctive. The pendulum will swing. I remember, and Steve remembers, when we got started in the business, how hostile and toxic the environment is. I mean, I'm chuckling about it now. Everybody remembers the first time on a trading floor that you get your ass chewed out. And it's in front of literally 100 people. And 100 people stop doing what they're doing to watch you just get ripped apart. And you learn from it. You weren't going to know at that moment you were asking the wrong question at the wrong time. But after that, you sure as hell knew it. And listen, I am by no means advocating that, okay? Because when Steve and I grew up in this business, there were some miserable people. I mean, just miserable people that we had to work for. And I like the idea that we can teach in a kinder, gentler way, but we can't teach if the students aren't there. The students say, to hell with it, I want to go be on the beach on Bali. God bless them. But you know what? You just got to understand what you're setting yourself up for in your 30s and 40s.
That's right.
Yeah, you're holding yourself back.
Damien, let's turn back to investing a little bit. And what would you advise the NFL players to do today? Would you advise them to first get an advisor and then sit at their knee, so to speak, sort of like what you did, and then get involved as you pick up a little experience? Or do they get their feet wet and their hands dirty?
Well, listen, I've always been an advocate of hiring professionals. Nobody knows everything. And so that's why there are professionals in their specific fields. And so for me, my number one piece of advice for any guy that's coming into the National Football League, get you a mentor, someone who can help guide you, help you navigate in these areas that, quite honestly, you might not be real familiar. That's what I did. My parents helped me as far as advising me to bring mentors aboard. And then it was just easy for me to find mentors at my alma mater at Boston College. And it was the biggest blessing of my life because all three of them helped me in different areas of my business career. That's what I would tell these guys is get a mentor, someone who can help you out. And when you're investing for the long haul. Too many guys that they, again, social media does so much. There's good in social media, but there's a lot of damage that gets done in social media because there's so many images that portray like, yeah, I invested 50 grand and then I got a return of 50 million and I got it in 3 years. And I just tell guys, that's just not the case. You can't get caught up in stuff that's just not real. So I just tell guys, play the long game. You got a lot of life to live, play the long game. And when it's all said and done, by the time you're 50, 60, man, you want to be sitting back with your grandkids and enjoying life and traveling and enjoying experiences.
Absolutely. Let me ask a question. You're number one draft choice, so you're popular with everybody who's got a deal and a scam. What was the craziest investment that anybody came to you with and said, hey, you got to do this?
Yeah. So like my rookie year, man, number one pick, and I had a guy who wanted me to invest in luxury restaurants. I knew right off the top of my head, there was no way I was going to do anything like that because the restaurant business is a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. And he wanted me to invest like $4.5 million in his restaurants. And I'm like, no way. And that was one thing. That's actually part of something that someone told me a long time ago. Learn to say no. And that's what I tell all these guys coming into the league. The number one thing that you have to learn to do is say no, because there are going to be so many people that's going to come out of the woodworks with deals, offers, this, that, everything imaginable, just to try to pry some money from you. And you got to learn to say no, because if you don't, man, you'll end up bankrupt just like quite a few guys that I know.
Those are always such tragic stories. I want to ask a quick question here, and it really is a tragic story. I imagine, and Damian, I'm asking you if this is true, that you're on an NFL sideline in the practices all day long. You get access to some pretty notable business leaders like Bob Kraft. I'm thinking about Emmett Smith, and one of the things he said was like when he hung up the cleats, he realized, I've got a one-on-one conversation with Jerry Jones. I'm going to milk that for all I can. I'm going to hang out with Jerry Jones as long as he lets me. And I don't know Emmett Smith personally. I don't know Jerry Jones, but that seems like a darn good idea. I mean, is that something that the average football player on the sidelines does have a hotline to the owner and can learn, whether it's Bob Kraft, your buddy, Steven Tepper, or whomever?
A lot of guys don't think that way, to be quite honest with you. There's guys that are real focused on that. And think about it from this perspective. What joy brings an owner for a guy to go out there, not only be a successful player during his tenure with the organization, but also you play a role in him becoming a successful businessman. I mean, that to me, as an owner, that's something to be very, very proud of. That's one of the things that Jerry Jones does a lot for his former players, is that he involves those guys and pass along knowledge, connections, all those type of things. And you see quite a few guys within the Dallas Cowboys organization that are heavily involved in the business world. And I can go down a list of other teams that have similar makeups as well. But unfortunately, there are some guys who they get the money and they get caught up in material stuff and they spend a lot of money on the material stuff and not think long term. And it costs them when they get out of the league.
Yeah. I think you can be an excellent role model. You are an excellent role model to the younger players to see how it's done and continue to be a preacher on that front. I thought what you just said, by the way, about the owners and them should want to develop men is a beautiful way of putting it. Just beautiful.
It's cultural. I mean, basically you build a culture. Every business lives and dies by its culture. And if you have the culture where you're helping people get better in life, do better in life, then you're going to pick up more free agents. If that's one of the perks, that they're going to help you with your life after football. I'm surprised that more don't do it. Dave's kind of interesting because Dave doesn't have that kind of business. Dave's got a very temper, a small circle of friends, but he's always willing to talk. And I know he has to players about it, but it's kind of difficult to impart your wisdom as a hedge fund manager. versus Jerry Jones, which owns so many businesses, Dave's fairly concentrated. Although investing more and more in private businesses over the last few years. Damon, we don't want to keep you too long, but what's your outlook going forward? I know you mentioned you wanted to see what the Fed's going to do. What are your expectations at this point for the market? Are you a buyer now, or you're just going to, as you said, just wait and see how things turn out a little bit? There's never any rush. There should never be any rush to put money to work or to sell, frankly.
Yeah. Right now, honestly, I'm in wait and see mode. I might decrease some of my positions because, let's be honest, this market has just been, it's been hot. Quite honestly, I feel like it's overheated. And so we're going to come back down to earth. So I'm not really putting a lot more capital into the market. I'm just staying put, seeing how things play out. Obviously, we're going to get some news about the inflation and things like that. But right now, I'm just staying put. I'm not doing too much of anything right now.
Yeah, I'm in that camp too. I think Jimmy's in that camp also. But now, here's the key. Give us your Super Bowl pick. Which two teams are going to be in there and who's taking it?
Okay, well, let me preface it by saying this. This is about as wide open a postseason that I've seen in quite some time. There's not one dominant team out there. Everyone has warts. With that being said, from the NFC side, I'm going to have to go with the Green Bay Packers. I think them getting home field advantage, playing up in Lambeau Field is a tough, tough venue to play in. Aaron Rodgers, he's going to be the league MVP. He's had a fantastic year. They're getting some big-time players back for the postseason, which only bolsters their team. So I'm going to go with Green Bay on the NFC side. And on the AFC side, I'm going to go to Kansas City Chiefs. I think the Kansas City Chiefs, they started off the season early. They started out, they had some bumps in the road. Everyone was expecting Patrick Mahomes and that high-flying offense to just run through everybody, and that wasn't the case. They had to kind of figure things out. As the season progressed, they slowly started doing that. The defense started playing well. And I think when you get into the postseason, quarterback play is so, so important. And you won't find too big of quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes, although my buddy Tom Brady is going to have something to say about that with Aaron Rodgers. But I'm going to go with Green Bay and Kansas City to meet in the Super Bowl in Los Angeles.
And Green Bay to take it all, I assume, from...
Yeah, I'm going to go with... I think Aaron Rodgers gets it done this year.
Interesting. And what do you think the Jets' record will be next year? They've got a bunch of draft choices. They've got the youngest team in the league right now. Started 10 rookies or so. Where are they going to wind up next year?
I think the Jets, I think they make a jump. I think they go 9-8 next year. They played a bunch of rookies this year, got a bunch of valuable experience. They got a ton of salary cap space to spend on bringing in players, and they got a bunch of draft picks. They got a ton of draft picks to really improve this roster. This is going to be a big, big offseason for the Jets. The honeymoon is over for the head coach, Robert Saleh, and Zach Wilson, the rookie quarterback. There's going to be a lot of pressure on them to really make that jump and compete in the AFC East. So I'm going to go 9-8. I think they can make the wild card next year if they hit on those free agent draft picks that they have this offseason.
And what about the Panthers?
I think the Panthers are going to be in a little bit of trouble. And the reason why I say that is clearly the coach is on the hot seat. That's already been said. But the biggest thing is their quarterback situation. Sam Darnold, he's not the guy. And the problem is they can't release him. They exercise what's called a fifth-year option. So he's going to make about $20 million. And that's going to be against the salary cap. So you can't release him. And so if you don't have a quarterback in this league, you're not winning, period. And when you look at their division, you have Tampa Bay, you have New Orleans, and you have the Atlanta Falcons. All those teams did better than the Carolina Panthers this year. So I think it's going to be tough sledding for the Carolina Panthers in 2022.
Damian, when you just said that about Sam Darnold, and as a lifelong Jets fan, I couldn't help but thinking about Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez. And it's sad, honestly. These kids come out of wherever they come out of, Mark Sanchez, USC, with such promise. Do the Jets, does an organization like that just blow them up? Just those two, three critical years in the beginning that you can't get back and they've lost those formative training years?
Well, here's what happens. And I love the Jets organization. They really treated myself and my family well. Every story is different. But what I will say is this. In Sam Darnold's case, I don't think the Jets did enough to really aid his development.
I would agree.
And they openly admitted that. With Geno Smith, it was pretty much the same thing. Bad drafts. The roster management wasn't good. So he didn't have a chance to succeed. Now, Mark Sanchez, he comes into basically a ready-made team. Remember, the Jets traded up to 5. We weren't a bad team. Actually, the year before Mark Sanchez got there, we were 9-7. And we fired Eric Mangini. So we weren't a bad team. We trade up to 5. We bring in Rex Ryan. All of a sudden, Mark is with a veteran team, and we hit the ground running. And we obviously go to those back-to-back AFC championship games. But once all those veteran guys were released or went somewhere else, they put it all on Mark Sanchez's shoulders, and it just didn't work out, whether it be lack of talent or Mark just couldn't fulfill the hype of being a high draft pick, but it just didn't work out. I think for the Jets, a lot of times with the Jets organization, they tend to listen to outside noise too much. You're in the biggest market in the country, and there's always a lot of chatter out there. And sometimes when the media talks a lot, Woodie Johnson tends to react to what the media says. And you can't do that in this business. You got to stick to the plan and see the plan through.
Oh, baby, that's long-term investing.
See?
I love it.
Exactly right.
That's exactly how it is.
Yeah, you can't listen to the people sniping at you from the sidelines. Unfortunately, as you well know, Damian, and you know better than I do, New York City is one hell of a echo chamber. It's just a bubble, and these snipings from the media just reverberate off the walls.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's one of the toughest markets, if not the toughest market to play in, unless you're dressed like Santa Claus in Philadelphia. But Damian, before I lose my appetite for dinner, I'm not going to ask you about the Giants because they're a whole different story.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy. Maybe I will. So Joe Judge, what did the Maras see in him that neither Saban or Belichick saw? Was he there when you were? I don't think he was.
No, he wasn't there when I was there. Obviously, Joe Judge is kind of, he comes from that, ultimately, I call it that Belichick tree because he was with Bill and he was with Nick Saban. And so John Mara, he wants to go back to those days of Parcells, that kind of tough, disciplinarian, hard-nosed type of guy. And Joe Judge kind of projects himself like that, but not everybody's Bill Parcells. There's a reason why Bill Parcells is in the Hall of Fame. He has special qualities about him. So when I look at the Giants organization, it's really sad. They're a family-run business, but I think they really need to look at how they run their business. And I honestly think they need to blow it up. Bring somebody in from the outside to run it. Because right now, what they're doing is not working. And it hasn't worked for quite some time.
Since George Young.
Yeah. Everyone talks about the Jets, but the Giants are the laughingstock in the league right now. They're the punchline right now, and that should not be the case if you're the New York Football Giants.
Yeah, too great a legacy. No, I agree with you. It's aggravating. And my comment was basically, look, Belichick and Saban, arguably two of the greatest judges of talent. Belichick's, he's had some wins in terms of people coming out and coaching and some not so great wins. But at the end of the day, neither one saw fit to make Judge anything more than a position coach. So the Maras thought they knew better than either one of those guys. And that's why I don't want to beat up on him too much because he hasn't had the team, but it's a game of numbers. And either you put the numbers up or you don't. And he hasn't. So.
Yeah, you are what your record says you are. And that came from the great Bill Parcells.
Yep. He was a great personality. Any event, I want to thank you so much. I mean, we're just so happy and pleased you come on. And thanks for making this a very special episode.
Oh, no, listen, this has been a treat for me, man, just to be able to come on to a different venue, different turf, and be able to talk to you guys about investing and just basically picking your guys' minds about how you see things. So this has really been an honor for me to really talk to you guys. And hopefully one day I would love to get on the show with Scott and company, and we can talk about the markets on CNBC.
We'll definitely do it. That would be great.
Damian, this has been just a treat. You are one hell of an athlete. You are an incredibly smart guy, and you're just a terrific human being. Thank you for this time. This was a privilege.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Great. Thanks so much. All right. Well, we'll end it there. Damian, good luck this weekend with the games. I'm going to go all in on the Jets for next season.
Absolutely. Do it. Do it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Jim Labenthal is an investment advisor representative of Cerity Partners and holds the Chartered Financial Analyst designation. Jim Labenthal and Cerity Partners are unaffiliated with Stephen Weiss. The securities discussed in this podcast by Jim, unless otherwise stated to the contrary, are securities that Jim either manages within the current client portfolios or owned by Jim personally. You should not consider the information discussed as personalized investment, tax, or legal advice, or solicitation to buy or sell any specific security. There's no guarantee that views and opinions expressed in this podcast will come to pass or a guarantee of future performance. Investing involves risk, and before investing, you should consult a qualified professional advisor. Stephen Weiss is not a registered investment advisor and is not affiliated with any regulated entity. The views and opinions he expresses are his own and are not intended to be advice or recommendations. Stephen does not guarantee the accuracy of his statements or views. Investors should perform their own due diligence and not rely upon the information contained in this podcast as the sole basis for their investments.